it's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full-auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
All right. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank AC/DC for showing up to open up the show today and everyone's wonderful applause welcoming me in this afternoon. I really appreciate it. You know, yesterday we started to touch towards the end on an ATF scheme for learning more and more and more about gun sales as an emergency measure. We have a long history throughout the world and a long history here in this country about governments needing, as they call it, for emergency powers over something, because otherwise they're going to lose control over something. The ATF is trying to use an emergency status over something dealing with actions going on in another country to have emergency status and powers over us. Of course, the ATF has a long history of excess and overreaching, and they're at it again. Let me read this to you. Using exaggerated reports of gun smuggling from the U.S. into Mexico as their justification, the ATF has filed for an emergency regulation requiring gun dealers to keep track of their customers and file special reports to ATF whenever a customer purchases more than one semi-automatic rifle within any five-day period. Such special reporting is already required for multiple sales of handguns and has proven to be thoroughly and completely useless as a law enforcement tool. ATF's requested regulation, which is unconstitutional, violates a statutory prohibition against firearms registration schemes and was obviously filed with an emergency simply as a means of bypassing Congress would be temporary, meaning that it would have to be renewed in 4 or 5 months, and is said to only apply to gun dealers in states bordering Mexico, though the regulation as submitted seems to be missing that specific limitation. So they will put it out across all 50 states. At this point, the proposed regulation is awaiting approval from the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. Political observers will recall that OIRA is headed by President Obama's old friend Cass Sunstein, who famously advocated for the abolition of all hunting and for the extension of legal rights, including the rights to have a court-appointed attorney to animals. While Sunstein is an attorney and college professor specializing in part in constitutional law, his record shows that his constitution does not include the Second Amendment. This is expected that Sunstein's office will approve the ATF's emergency regulation by the first week of January unless there is immediate and vehement objection from members of Congress and the public. In the late 70s, shortly after Neil Cox took over the NRA's lobbying efforts, ATF leaders attempted to expand their powers by implementing a regulatory scheme requiring that gun manufacturers add a government-defined 13-digit serial number to every gun and that dealers report detailed information, including that new serial number, to ATF for every sale. Records of those sales, guns, and purchasers were to be stored in ATF computers. It was gun registration, pure and simple. The scheme might have slipped through had it not been for the heightened visibility of ATF due to Neil Cox's efforts and his immediate sounding of the alarm when the proposal was introduced. Congress had, upon numerous occasions, debated the idea of a federal gun registration law, that had rejected the idea on each occasion. For ATF to decide to bypass Congress and implement such a registration scheme via regulation was rightly perceived as an affront by many members of Congress, and their total just indignant response was to remove some $4 million from the agency's operating budget. Now, the amount that ATF said they were expecting to spend on additional schemes. That overreach, along with just total abuses of honest gun dealers by the ATF, led to the introduction of the McClure-Volkmer Firearms Owners Protection Act to repeal some of the more erroneous and confusing sections of the Gun Control Act of 1968. It was to be hoped that the current members of Congress will have a similarly indignant response to ATF's overreaching in this instance, as here again, the agency is trying to implement by regulation something which Congress has considered and rejected in the past. Rights opponents will argue that rights activists, like you and I generally, are overly sensitive and unyielding in our position that we reactively oppose any firearms regulation, regardless of how benign or effective they may be. There will be an inclination to accept ideas like this and then place the burden of proof upon the rights advocates, such as me and you, to explain why this idea is a bad idea. Really, the burden of proof belongs to those who wish to interfere with our rights. It's up to the ATF to show their legal authority to institute this proposed regulation and that it does not violate the spirit or intent of any existing law. It's also up to the ATF to show that their proposed regulation will be effective and productive as a means of fighting illegal gun trafficking. The fact that that ATF can present no such evidence at all in support of their idea, just the suggestion that the proposal sounds reasonable and might be of use. And guess what, guys? That's not good enough. It is overreaching for an agency to follow after Congress and enact regulations where Congress has refused to enact laws, especially where Congress considered and discarded those exact actions. This is extra legal for an agency to ignore statutory limitations, barring the collection or archiving of information about gun purchases, not to mention limitations under the Paperwork Reduction Act forbidding unnecessary increases in paperwork burdens. The multiple sales reporting scheme claims to be aimed at keeping guns out of Mexico, but it fails on that point as well. We'll continue on with this after the break. You can hear all about it. It's going to affect you. It's going to affect me. It's going to affect anybody who wants to buy a gun. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. I hope you paid attention to all the wonderful show and, the sponsors of not just the show, but the entire network as well. So please, spend your money with them. They believe in freedom and truth and rights and all that same great stuff that you and I believe in. So, if you're going to spend your money, spend it with the companies that actually advertise on the show and on the network. Okay, so this ATF multiple sales reporting scheme claims to be aimed at keeping guns out of Mexico, but it fails on the following points. First, it will have little effect on gun smuggling in Mexico, for smugglers familiarize themselves with the laws that they are breaking. They will easily avoid ensnaring themselves in such an obvious trap. Second, while the actual number of guns that arrive in Mexico from the U.S. is impossible to determine, we know that the number being reported is inflated as we discussed during the entire show yesterday, since the ATF only traces those guns selected by the Mexican authorities for them to trace in the U.S. And there's strong evidence that American civilian gun shops are only one very small part of many sources of guns in Mexico, and a minor, minor source at that. Pictures of confiscated arms in Mexican press routinely include grenades, rocket launchers, heavy machine guns, and arms that you and I can't just go to the gun store and buy. Finally, the proposed multiple sale scheme places a significant burden on dealers and puts them at an increased risk of prosecution for clerical errors if they fail to detect a repeat buyer in a timely fashion, which makes them pseudo-ATF agents. And if they don't comply with the regulation because they have a federal firearms license, they don't comply as being a pseudo-federal agent, they can be criminally prosecuted, which is unconstitutional and illegal. Now, if you're just as pissed off about this as me, you can tell the ATF and Congress that you oppose the ATF's outreach thoroughly. Any or all of the following ways. Call the Office of Management and Budget, the Office of Information and Regulation Affairs, Department of Justice. You can call them, the desk officer, which is at the following phone number. Area code 202-395-6466. Again, the Office of Management and Budget, Office of Information and Regulation Affairs, Department of Justice. 202-395-6466. You can email Barbara A. Terrell, ATF Firearms Industry Program Branch. You can email her at barbara.terrell, T-E-R-R-E-L-L, at atf.gov. Barbara.terrell at atf.gov. Also, call your senators and representatives throughout the U.S. Capitol switchboard at area code 202-224-3121. And keep that number, 202-224-3121. You don't have to know the actual number to the actual representative or senator that represents you. Just call the switchboard and tell them who they are. This is who my senator is, this is who my representative is. There is no such thing as reasonable infringement on liberty. They try to tell you, oh, it's reasonable, but infringes on liberty, there is no such thing. Now, moving on. We have all sorts of different data which is collected by the federal government, none of which is ever given on a timely fashion. However, it's still not quite the end of 2010, but we already have the 2010 census put together. How is it that the census gets put out before the end of the year? It's so efficient, it's done, that when we want other information like crime data, at the end of the bell ringing for 2010, within about 2 or 3 weeks, we should be able to have all of the crime data for 2010. It's stored in computers. All of that crap should be automated. All of my computer stuff is automated. Heck, when I'm done with the radio show, it automatically uploads onto my server. You can go to 2aradio.com, click on the archives. It automatically uploads to the archives. I don't have to do anything. And I'm just a single radio host. I don't have like a whole group of people helping me with this show. I don't have a team. I don't have a staff. The government does. Way too many. Anyhow, the U.S. Census is beginning to release a number of different figures from the 2010 count, and there are some very interesting tidbits of interest here. Listen to one. One is the fact that 7 of the 9 states that do not have a state income tax grew faster than the national average. The other two, South Dakota and New Hampshire, had the fastest growth in their regions. Now, high taxes, big government, socialist types like to spout the nonsense that the tax structure does not influence business or residency decisions, which is total bull. You talk to anybody who's in business or moves to another state, they'll tell you it does matter. Yet again, more lies by the government. 35% of the nation's total population growth, from 281,000 in 2000 to just under 281 million to just under 309 million occurred in those nine states. 35% of the growth occurred in nine states. In Texas, the state with the greatest growth, had a diversified economy, is business friendly, and has low taxes. Obama and members of the Congress bemoan our nation's dreary economic situation while contemplating increased taxes and implementing burdensome legislation by standing idly by while government agencies impose oppressive regulations without the constitutional authority to do so. The quickest way to kickstart the economy and return the constitutional governance is to take an axe to government. I'm not talking about slowing the growth of government, which in legislative doublespeak is called a cut. I'm talking about taking draconian measures like eliminating unconstitutional agencies. Department of Education, Department of Energy, Department of Homeland Security, the Transportation Security Administration, the FDA, the Corporation for the Public Broadcasting. All of those for starters. Close down military bases around the world, ending the perpetual wars and bringing most of our troops home, phasing out social welfare programs and eliminating funding for leftist boondoggles like the National Endowment for the Arts. After that, how about we take a close look at closing down the Federal Reserve, return to a gold standard, and repeal the 16th and 17th Amendments? Where else could we go? The government types and socialists, and of course, that's redundant, they hear suggestions like this and they wail like a bunch of babies, but slashing government and ending its ability to debase the currency, increase taxes, and take more control over our lives would be a giant leap towards constitutional governance. Anything less is continued support of the continuing tyranny here in the United States. The one thing that holds off the government from suspending, illegally, might I add, the Constitution and taking full control over our lives is the Second Amendment. Our ability and our knowledge to own guns and be able to use functional guns. That's the one thing that holds them off. And it is the true mark of a free society, the true mark of keeping peace with the government. Before they push us into a corner and make it to where the citizens of the United States must arm for the third armed American Revolution. The second was the Civil War. That's a whole different subject. Stay tuned. There's plenty more to come, guys. We're going to talk about all kinds of rights after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in to 2A Radio, the best Second Amendment radio show in America. RoninTactical.com has certified concealed carry training specialists that travel to you and your group of self-protection advocates. Organize a group of friends, family, or co-workers who take their responsibility of self-protection seriously, and RoninTactical.com will send out a certified training specialist who will provide a course of instruction that will get you and your group certified to carry concealed in over 30 states while providing you, the organizer, a commission for organizing the event. Do you travel for work, family, or vacation and want to remain armed and safe when traveling? Contact RoninTactical.com for details on staying home and having one of our certified professionals travel to you to provide the training and credentials for you and your group to safely and legally carry concealed in over 30 states. Call 888-416-4809 or go online to RoninTactical.com.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
All right, guys, welcome back. Now, of course, we talk about Second Amendment rights. We talk about all kinds of rights here on 2A Radio, which is why we're a bit diverse. We're going to talk a little bit about rights right now, other than Second Amendment. Now, Julian Assange, the guy behind WikiLeaks, had an exclusive interview with, I think the guy's name is Cenk Uygur. He was on MSNBC's Dylan Ratigan show. He described criticism in Washington and elsewhere of WikiLeaks as nothing short of attacks on journalism and the First Amendment. I couldn't agree with him more. Now, pressured by the interviewer on comments made recently by Mike Huckabee and others who consider Assange a terrorist, the WikiLeaks founder dismissed Huckabee as another idiot trying to make a name for himself. Well, Mike Huckabee's a pretty smart guy. Is he trying to make a name for himself and jump on this WikiLeaks bandwagon? The answer is absolutely yes. He also called people such as Sarah Palin and Huckabee as shock jock politicians. Well, there's some truth in that too. Assange called attempts to shut down WikiLeaks and arrest he, as its leader, as digital McCarthyism, and issued what he described as a warning to journalists that failure to defend his right to publish cables and other government documents would ultimately empower the U.S. government to shut down not just WikiLeaks, but anyone who publishes information the government doesn't like. Assange said to journalists who don't side with him, "You're next." Now, perhaps his harshest words were unleashed on Republican critics who've called for his arrest, and apparently Assange keeps tabs on those comments by watching Fox News. I totally agree with Julian Assange. He is, before they put out anything, and the latest deal was all of this garbage with these government military documents, which were given to him by a PFC who's gay, who's completely pissed off about the don't ask, don't tell policy, because he wants to be as flamboyant as he can in the military. And he got pissed and gave all of these documents to Assange. I don't know what happened to this guy. The mere fact that he's gay and he did this because he's gay and pissed off, he's probably not going to get much of anything going on. Otherwise, he should be put to death simply for the acts of having done this. Assange actually contacted the United States government and said, "Look, I'd like your help in going through these documents. I'm going to publish, but I don't want to publish anything that's so sensitive it could cause people their lives." U.S. government said, "No." So he and his team delayed putting the information out because they went through all the documents themselves and didn't put up anything on WikiLeaks that would cause anybody their life. They put up less than 10% of the documents they actually got, because the rest were too sensitive to actually put up. And of course, you don't hear any of that out of the lamestream media. You don't hear any of that out of the government, because this is just another cry by the government. Right now, today, this moment, Obama's trying to control the internet to where the government regulates and controls the internet. The courts have told him that they can't do it. You're not allowed to do it. You can't control the internet. Don't even try. They're doing it anyhow. A big bird flying in the face of the federal courts. We're going to do it anyhow. Interesting, isn't it? We can't put up with this. How about this? How about violating of another person's rights? A Sacramento area pilot is being punished for a video he put up on YouTube. He's an airline pilot. He's being disciplined by the Transportation Security Administration, the government, for posting video on YouTube pointing out what he believes are serious flaws in airport security. So, the 50-year-old pilot who lives outside Sacramento asked that neither he nor his airline be identified. He has worked for the airline for more than a decade and was deputized by the TSA to carry a gun in the cockpit. He is an armed pilot. He's also a helicopter test pilot for the Army Reserve and flew missions for the United Nations in Macedonia. I don't even know where Macedonia is, but this guy flew there. 3 days after he posted a series of 6 video clips recorded with a cell phone camera at San Francisco International Airport, 4 federal air marshals and 2 sheriff's deputies arrived at his house to confiscate his federally issued firearm. The pilot recorded that event as well and provided the video to Sacramento News 10. At the same time as the federal marshals took the pilot's gun, a deputy sheriff asked him to surrender his state-issued permit to carry a concealed weapon. A sheriff deputy who hasn't the authority to do that. A follow-up letter from the sheriff's department said the CCW permit would be reevaluated following the outcome of the federal investigation. The YouTube videos posted on November 28th showed what the pilot calls the irony of flight crews being forced to go through TSA screening while ground crews who service the aircraft are able to access secured areas simply by swiping a card. As you can see, airport security is kind of a farce. It's only smoke and mirrors, so you people believe there's actually something going on here, the pilot narrates. Video shot in the cockpit shows a medieval-looking rescue axe available on the flight deck after the pilots have gone through the metal detectors. I would say a 2-foot crash axe looks a lot more formidable than a box cutter, the pilot remarks. A letter from the TSA dated December 6th informed the pilot that, quote, an administrative review into your deputation status as a federal flight deck officer has been initiated. According to the letter, the review was directly related to the discovery by TSA staff of the YouTube videos. Quote, the content and subject of these videos may have violated regulations concerning disclosure of sensitive security information, the letter said. The pilot's attorney, Dan Werno of Santa Ana, California, said he believed the federal government sent 6 people to the house to send a message. Of course they did. Quote, and the message was, you've angered us by telling the truth and by showing America that there are major security problems despite the fact that we spent billions of dollars allegedly to improve airline safety, according to his attorney. The pilot said he is not in trouble with the airline, but his supervisor asked him to remove public access to the YouTube videos. He does, however, face potential civil penalties from the TSA. He said he'd like to go public when it becomes clear what the government plans to do with him. He should be protected as a federal whistleblower. So, this guy's rights have been violated. What else are we going to allow the government to get away with? And they're using, oh, well, you're a federal flight deck officer. You have to follow what we say. Meaning, wait. Meaning, I have to give up some of my basic, foundational, natural human rights in order to be a federal flight deck officer? I have to give up some rights and allow government more control over my life because I carry a gun in the cockpit. I reject that. I reject that completely. The government exists in part to protect our freedoms and liberties, not to take them away or otherwise give us some malarkey garbage that, well, because of this, you give up that. Because we say this, you're not allowed that. Because we, through our power and authority, allow you this, you agree not to that. That's not what the government is supposed to be about. That's not what the Constitution allowed the government to do. Don't allow it to happen to you, of this guy, or anybody else. Stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now, Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. I'm going to give you an interesting story that's out of my town of Las Vegas. Says two Las Vegas men pled guilty in federal court to conspiring with a U.S. Navy SEAL and another man to unlawfully sell machine guns and other firearms and explosives in Las Vegas, Colorado, and elsewhere, according to the Nevada U.S. Attorney Daniel Bogdan. Andrew Kaufman, 36, pled guilty to conspiracy to sell machine guns and other firearms and explosives and to illegally transfer a machine gun. Omar Aguirre, 35, who had not previously been charged in the case, pled guilty to a criminal information charging conspiracy to sell machine guns and other firearms and explosives. They both pled guilty before Senior U.S. District Court Lloyd George and are scheduled to be sentenced March 25th. According to the plea agreements, Kaufman and Aguirre were able to obtain illegal weapons and explosives through co-conspirator Nicholas Bickle, who was an active-duty Navy SEAL. Bickle allegedly smuggled the weapons and explosives to the United States from overseas, and the defendants then arranged for the weapons and explosives to be transported from San Diego to Las Vegas and Colorado, where they sold them to individuals, including persons who had the intent to take the firearms to Mexico. More than 70 firearms were smuggled and sold in the conspiracy, including rifles, pistols, shotguns, and 30 machine guns, the plea memorandums state. Two other defendants in the case, Bickle, 33 of San Diego, Richard Paul, 34 of Durango, Colorado, were arraigned on a superseding indictment, which charges them with conspiracy, distribution and transportation of explosive materials by a non-licensee, transporting a destructive device without a license, unlawful possession and transfer of machine guns, unregistered firearms, unlawfully imported firearms, and stolen firearms, and dealing in firearms without a license. They pled not guilty to the charges and were released pending a trial set to begin January 24th. The defendants were charged following a five-month investigation by ATF, and the Naval Criminal Investigation Service, and Las Vegas Metro Police. Authorities said that undercover ATF task force officers purchased 18 machine guns and 14 other firearms from the defendants in Las Vegas and Durango in Bayfield, Colorado. The case is being prosecuted by Assistant U.S. Attorney Drew Smith and J. Gregory Damm, D-A-M-M. Very interesting. Because the access to virtually all of these guns came through a U.S. Navy SEAL. Highly, highly unusual. You normally have the highest of moral character coming out of the highest of the U.S. Special Forces. However, I have to let you know of this. U.S. Navy SEALs used to only accept applications from seasoned trigger pullers throughout all of the branches of the military. You don't have to join the Navy to become a Navy SEAL. You could be Delta Force. You could be an Army Ranger who's done some good stuff and apply to the Navy SEALs. You would then convert over to the SEALs if they accepted you, provided you passed training and they accepted you. They've got Every branch of the military is represented in the Navy SEALs. They are Navy now, but that doesn't mean they started the Navy. You know, they've got Marine Force Recon guys. They've got Marine Corps Scout Snipers that are now members of the Navy SEALs. Now, you can go, essentially, from basic training through a couple of other schools, then into what's called BUDS, which is the Basic Underwater Diving School. But BUDS training, which is the training for Navy SEALs. You can have zero operational experience and have been in the military for 6 months or less and be accepted into the training to be a Navy SEAL. Why? The high-end warrior guys are the guys in these teams that are getting stuff done. And they're getting the stuff done off of the books and out of the headlines. So the more special forces that are available to the U.S. military and the military commanders and U.S. Special Operations Command, the more effective they can be. And the more effective they can be without having to report it and without it being in the headlines. The problem with this can be, as we're seeing in this case, a guy that's a Navy SEAL that's now doing all these illegal things. So, don't know the answer for it, but I do know that these guys are arrested and facing charges, as they damn well should be. You gotta do stuff, do it legally. Do it within the confines of the law. If nothing else, do it within some sort of constitutional ability. To smuggle guns in from other countries and sell them to people who have told you that they have some sort of criminal intent with the guns, it's just plain not the way to do things, guys. And that's the way these guys were going about it. According to the reports. I will qualify it. According to the reports. Now, I want to read to you a thing about a guy by the name of Joel Rosenberg, who was arrested for bringing a gun to police headquarters. Why should this be a problem? I don't know. So here goes. What happens when you bring a gun into a police station? Well, you get arrested. A month later. At least that's what happened to a fellow by the name of Joel Rosenberg, Minneapolis's most rabid gun advocate. After he flaunted the piece strapped to his side in front of Sergeant William Palmer in City Hall last month. Of course, we can see where the writer of this story is. Rosenberg was in police headquarters to pick up some document, and he came packing not only his handgun, but a video camera. The video captured Sergeant Palmer confronting Rosenberg about his gun before taking the weapon away with all the decorum of a father scolding his bratty son. Rosenberg argued that he had permission to carry inside City Hall and later filed a complaint against Sergeant Palmer. Palmer insisted that Rosenberg was violating a court order that bans guns on the premises. The warrant that was issued for Rosenberg's arrest agrees with the latter opinion. Rosenberg says he notified the sheriff's department of his intent to carry a weapon into the office that day, while the warrant says the sheriff has no record of that. Of course. It also calls out all of the smack talk that's been going on online after the incident. The warrant quotes passage from online comment boards and websites tied to Rosenberg, including a quote from a post titled, "An open letter to Sergeant Palmer. When you stupidly lunged at me to grab my knife and gun, you didn't watch my hands. One of them was on my backup gun." Now, it also referred to taunting YouTube video Rosenberg made a YouTube video Rosenberg made called, "Please Do Not Hurt Me, Sergeant William Palmer," in which Rosenberg whipped six different guns out of various pockets and holsters on his person. And so Rosenberg was arrested for felony possession of a dangerous weapon in a courthouse and for willful disobedience of a court mandate. Of course, he's going to be arraigned. Now, here's my thoughts on this. Where in the world did judges get the authority to say, you know what? Outright, I'm going to make a rule that there's no guns allowed in this courthouse. I live just outside of Las Vegas in a little town called Pahrump, Nevada in Nye County. We have a judge who said, made an order and said, no guns allowed in the courthouse, period. Really? Well, might I ask, Judge, who in the hell are you to tell me I have to give up my rights and freedoms when I walk into this building? You are a public servant, Your Honor. And as a public servant, you don't mandate to me what I can and cannot do. Now, it's interesting, because after this order was given, there were metal detectors put up at the doors of the courthouse. Then they were taken down and put up in front of just before you go into the courtroom. Then they were moved and put back at the entrances again, because there's other county offices in that building. Then they were taken down. Now they're in front of just the courts again. It's back and forth, back and forth. It's stupidity. And it's a violation of my rights and anybody else's rights that want to go in there. Not a fan of this sort of law by judicial mishap. Not a fan at all.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.